Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. The music is back. And why is the music back, you ask? Well, the music is back because we're out of football season. New coaches hired, all that good stuff. But more importantly, the Michigan State basketball teams are in contention, and the Detroit Lions, our Lions, they almost made it to the Super Bowl. If that doesn't warrant bringing the music back, then nothing does. I am Satchmo. Joining me shortly will be the one, the only, the Thin Man, DB. Looking forward to that. And so we got a fun show today. Got talking men's hoop, gritty, gritty, gritty stuff. And they're traveling to Minnesota, my own personal house of horrors. We're going to be talking women's hoops. That'll be fun as well. They're in contention, playing well. Talking a little men's hockey. Hockey team doing well. They've been splitting series recently, but, you know, they're splitting series against good teams. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Lions almost making the Super Bowl. We're going to have a little Taylor Swift conversation for those of you that are interested. And, yeah, a little more. We might talk a little Grammys. We might wonder why Travis Kelce wasn't at the Grammys, so we might do that as well. So we got a lot to talk about here on Sparty Talk. Joining me, as he does each and every episode, is the Thin Man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, Swifties.
Ha-ha! Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Oh, man, there's so much to talk about on the Taylor Swift front. I cannot wait. But we're going to begin where we begin each and every episode of Sparty Talk, which is talking Michigan State sports.
Yes.
So let's get going there. The men's basketball team, DB.
Mm-hmm.
Grit. It's found in grit.
Yeah.
Played Maryland, beat Maryland, and I just before we get into the game itself, which I watched over the course of two nights. Yeah, I recorded it and watched it and broke down some film, did all that sort of good stuff. Before we get to it, let's talk a little bit about the Washington Post coverage of Michigan State beating Maryland.
Yes.
For those of you that don't know, the Washington Post covers Maryland like it's the local team. And, it kind of is. And so they covered it. And it was heartbreak again. Maryland heartbroken in East Lansing. Michigan State lives in Maryland's fan, the heads of Maryland fans rent free TV.
Yes, Corey frickin' Lucius. That's
Corey frickin' Lucius, yes. Look, we all watched the game. There wasn't anything particularly heartbreaking about this game, yet Maryland apparently felt heartbroken again. over losing 63-54.
Yeah. Interestingly, the one in College Park, which was, it seemed like a long time ago, but only like, 10 days ago or so, was somewhat heartbreaking. I mean, it didn't end on any dramatic shot, but the Spartans were able to shut down their scorer, Jameer Young, in that game, more so in Maryland than they did in East Lansing.
Yes. It helped that the Maryland big guy got into foul trouble.
Yeah.
Maryland even couldn't even claim poor officiating because, every foul was obvious, including, running over a player on a pick and a roll.
Yeah.
It's just like, dude, you got three fouls. You got two fouls. You want to pick up your third foul by just, running over someone, let me roll to the basket and run over someone like you're a Mack truck. It's just like a bad idea.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
It reminded me of an Edong Ebok foul.
there is a name we don't hear much anymore.
Oh, we can go Spartan Big Men references all night long if you want. So it was an interesting game. It was a weird game in that with all the foul trouble Maryland was facing, you would have expected Michigan State to pull away more quickly than they did. But Maryland's defense is really good, and it kept them in the game till almost the last 5 minutes of the game. But at that time, I think Maryland just wore down. They were out of bodies. They were out of gas, and they just couldn't hold up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay. A recent trend for the Michigan State basketball team in several of their wins over the last couple of weeks has been, in fact, second half, better play and wearing teams down.
Yeah, well, look, Michigan State's playing excellent defense. No one's talking about it, but Michigan State's playing excellent defense. This is a team that forces a lot of turnovers. Their guards get their hands on a lot of balls, a lot of steals. Their big men are active. You know, they block a few shots here or there, and they're active. It's still a team that struggles to rebound. But even when they don't get the rebound, they defend really well.
Yeah.
And so it's fairly interesting on that front. Malik Hall, with the exception of the Penn State game, has been outstanding in Big Ten play. Not the Penn State game, the Northwestern game. With the exception of the Northwestern game, has been outstanding in Big Ten play. He's doing really well. And I thought a couple of things were interesting in the Maryland game. First of all, in the first half, Izzo trotted out a big lineup that included Carson Cooper and Jackson Cook. And I thought that worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. The other interesting thing I thought, beyond just Malik Hall being awesome and Tyson Walker just being able to get buckets whenever he wants, which is just remarkable. The two of them. The other thing I thought was kind of interesting is Devin Booker didn't see the floor. And Izzo's been effusive of his praise of Booker recently, saying he's improving, he's 10 times better than what he used to be. He's been starting to get minutes in other games outside of Maryland. And it struck me that I think Izzo just viewed Maryland as too physical for Booker, and it was a tight game. He's like, all right, I'm just rolling with my upperclassmen on this one, and, you know, I'm going to win or lose with them. And it worked.
Right.
So,
I think Izzo is turning into sort of like a baseball manager with these lineups. You know, he sits down on the day of the game, and he's like, well, what can I do today? And he's like a mad scientist in the locker room or whatever, just like, all right, here's what we're going to do today. And the guy never stops changing, you know. I mean, people get on his case sometime, but he has a way of sort of figuring things out. He knows his team better than anybody else knows his team.
He does. And here's the other thing that's interesting about Izzo. Izzo's a tinkerer. I mean, if Izzo was a car mechanic, he would hate life right now, right? Because you can't tinker as a car mechanic anymore. You plug it into the computer, and the computer would tell you what to do. But that's not the type of tinker Izzo is. Izzo, like, wants to work on cars from the 80s and 90s. I don't know if he was a mechanic or not, but that's the type of mechanic he would be. Because then you could tinker with the car and see what works and what doesn't work and change things up and that sort of stuff. And Izzo likes to tinker with lineups. So when he gets to March, when he gets to tournament time, he knows what pieces fit together and what doesn't. And if things go wrong, and things always go wrong, when things go wrong, he's like, we've been in that situation. Let's plug these three or four people together because we know what kind of works and we know what steps to run with them.
Yep. I think Tom Izzo changes his own oil.
Oh, 100%. Either that or he gets Steven to do it for him now.
More likely, yes. Yeah, Steven Izzo doing.
a lot of Spartan alum back to watch the Maryland game, including Jason Richardson, who must have been super proud of watching Colin Carr skying for that alley-oop.
Colin Carr has been looking like Jason Richardson lately.
It's the best comparison we have. It really is. And Colin Carr's game is going to develop. But right now, you can tell with Carr and Booker is that they are skilled or athletic and skilled players that don't quite get it at both ends yet. And as a result, you can't trust them out there. But you kind of have to trust them out there.
Yes.
And so each game appears to be, your mileage may vary as we continue the car theme here on Sparty Talk. it's interesting to watch. And DB, as you noted, this is like at least the second or third straight game that they pulled away in the second half. The other game being the Michigan game, which, full disclosure, Satchmo did not watch. And Satchmo did not watch because he does not get Peacock, and he refuses to subscribe.
So you're not going to be one of those devastated people that are Xing out or tweeting out about the sky is falling, I don't have Peacock tonight.
No. People, do we not understand what's going on here? Do you not understand that there are people that don't get the Big Ten Network, but they get ESPN, and how frustrated they are that games are on ETN? And then, it's part of it, right? It's part of the deal. Like, look, I'm fortunate enough to get BTN. DB, you are fortunate enough to get BTN. But there are a lot of people that aren't fortunate enough to get BTN, and they're sitting there saying, well, they can't watch a BTN game.
Yeah.
Unless they pay for the streaming. There are a lot of people that have cut the cord, and they're like, all right, well, I can, you know, how many streaming services do you want us to pay for? And so it just becomes a thing. And look, this is not second guessing. This is not third guessing. This is 100% first guessing. When cutting the cord became popular, everyone's like, you want to know what? I just want the channels I want to watch, and don't give me the rest. Pay the right price for it and all this sort of stuff. I was going to be careful what you wish for, because the moment you start unbundling stuff, then you're going to start subscribing to 5, 6, 7, 8 services instead of one service to get everything you want.
Yes.
And when you subscribe to 5, 6, 7, 8 services, you're going to end up spending more money than you do when you subscribe to one. Everything, no, it's not going to work that way. It's not going to work that way. What are you talking about? I just want the 5 channels I care about, and I'm not going to end up paying more. And I was like, you watch. It's exactly what's going to happen. And that's what's happened.
Yeah. And I'll digress for a second. So I'm an ESPN Plus person. I got up for the Red Wings, you know, so that I could see all the Red Wings games, because God knows they're not on ESPN enough. Anyway, it's a wonderful thing because I can hear Kenny Daniels and Mickey Redmond when they anytime. But anyway, the biggest thing that I noticed recently from picking that up was that when I look at the college basketball games, any of the leagues that are associated with ESPN, and it's all of them basically, except the Big Ten, really leaves the Big Ten sort of in a vacuum. It's a shame that the Big Ten ended their agreement with the with ESPN, ABC, because there's a void there. I mean, especially, it wasn't noticeable in football season to me, but in basketball season, there's all these games that ESPN Plus would pick up, and they're not there.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't like that. The Big Ten kind of messed up on that one, I think.
Well, look, they're getting the money, right? They're getting the cash.
Yeah.
In the end, it's all about dollar bill, y'all. And so, I mean, in that sense, yeah, but in terms of making it easy for the customer, the consumer, a one-stop shopping, it's problematic. I mean, look at the Big Ten football deal, right? You've got games on CBS, NBC, Big Ten Network, and Fox.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It's all over the place. Now, it's relatively easy to follow. It's not that big a deal. But then when you extend into streaming with exclusive games on Peacock and what I'm assuming are going to become exclusive games on Paramount Plus at some point and all of that sort of stuff, now you're talking, you know, real dough, right?
Yeah.
So this is a problem. It is not consumer friendly.
Nope.
On the other hand, it is very cash friendly for the universities. And this is what puts the Big Ten and the SEC in dominant positions.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see the news of this advisory committee that the Big Ten and the SEC are forming to decide what they want to do with college sports?
Yes.
Yeah. The reason they can do that is the SEC and the Big Ten have all the money. And part of the reason the Big Ten has all the money is these media deals. So on the one hand, we can bemoan the media deals making it tough on us and tough to watch on the other hand. But on the other hand, it's these media deals that put the Big Ten and by extension Michigan State in the driver's seat on the future of college athletics.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, this Big Ten SEC Advisory Committee has no official name. I think we should say, I think we should give it a name. It says, we have all the money, so you'll do what we want. That should be the name of the committee.
Yeah, yeah.
We have all the money, so we'll do what you want committee on college sports.
I have a name for them.
Ooh, what's your name for it?
The Champagne Room.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny. That's almost as funny as Washington State being the school that's holding up like the advancement of the college football playoffs media deal beyond the 1 or 2 years that they have it set up for now.
I think that's fantastic. Go Washington State. I don't care that much. I mean, I want to see Michigan State do well in college football, of course, but that's funny to me. I mean, go Washington State. Go Wazoo. Yeah.
It is pretty funny when you think about it, the SEC and Big Ten are forming this advisory committee, so they can't be held up by the likes of Washington State.
Did I hear somewhere in reading about that, too, just where we've gone off on a tangent, but that's all right. We go off on tangents on the podcast.
Yes, that's what we do.
Did I read somewhere that this formation could supplant the NCAA?
Well, what comes out of it could be a suggestion to replace the NCAA. See, all right, let's get into this just a little bit. It wasn't on the show agenda, but we'll get into it a little bit. So here's what's going on. The NCAA is facing a lot of lawsuits over antitrust violations of competition, and basically all revolving around restraint of trade and paying players, right?
Yeah.
And so Charlie Baker, the new president of NCAA, said, you want to know what? We probably should start paying the players money out of NIL. And if they'd suggested this 10 or 15 years ago, that might have been enough. But it's too late. The only way that they're really going to get out of any of this, just just realistically from a legal and financial standpoint, the only way they're going to get out of this is that they start they're going to have to start paying players a percentage of the revenue. And I hear all of you complain, they get scholarships, all that sort of stuff. That train's off the building. The only way this is going to work, and the scholarship money that most of these players are getting would pale in comparison to the percentage of revenue anyway. But they're going to have to get a percentage of revenue. And not only do they have to get a percentage of revenue, but the players are going to be able to collectively bargain how much money they're going to get paid. That's the only way this is going to work. If you take a look at the legalities of this, that's the only way. That's the only end game. That's the only outcome. Everyone knows this. Not everyone has accepted this, but everyone knows this, right? This is the destination. Now it's just the question of how long the train is going to get there and how many stops in between, right? The NCAA is trying to put as many stops between now and then as possible. They're trying to create a local train. And so the SEC and the Big Ten are like, all right, while the NCAA is trying to create a local train, is there an express train to this destination? Because this is where we're all getting up at, right? Everyone knows this is the final destination. So how quickly can we get there? And so that's where we're at right now. The final destination's already been decided. Now it's just a matter of how long it takes to get there. And so that's what this commission is doing. And more than likely what's going to happen is that the Power Five schools are going to break off and they're going to have a pay scale and a pay structure set up for players that involve that's collectively bargained that includes a percentage of a rev share of some sort, a percentage of the revenue going to the players. And that's going to be the salary structure for college football. And that way you don't have to worry about local boosters and how much money you're raising from NIL and all of that sort of stuff. That stuff goes away. And in its place is a revenue structure that makes sense, that levels the playing field for everyone. Everyone knows what the rules are. Everyone's playing in the same sort of field and you go from there. And actually, I think in the end, that's going to be a lot cleaner and a lot better for college football than we have right now. And the faster we get to that place, the better.
Yeah, I agree. And I've said this before, and this is a little pie in the sky, but I'd love to see recruiting just go by the wayside and for each of these different sports to do drafts.
Yeah, I would love that. I mean, that would be great. I don't think that's where we're headed, but I also don't think we want to be in a place where, you know, a school's chance for success in a football program depends on how many billionaire alumni they have. That just doesn't seem to be like a good place to be either.
No.
And so I actually think this percentage of the revenue and collectively bargaining how much money the players are going to get and all this sort of stuff, I actually think that's like the smartest, cleanest solution for all of this. And so that's where we're going to end up.
No, for sure.
And I'm okay with that.
I mean, I am too. I think a lot of people, you know, we've gone past the point of trying to fight that. So I think it's, you know, it makes the most sense than what's happening right now.
It makes a lot more sense than what's happening right now. I got a feeling that there are a lot of football coaches, a lot of college basketball coaches that don't like it. I have a feeling that this guy, I think Hackley's his name, that left Boston College to go be a coordinator in Green Bay. I think part of the reason why he left, and he's had moderate success at BC. Part of the reason why he left is, I don't want to deal with name NIL and transfer portal and roster and having to re-recruit my own roster every year and then deal with the transfer portal and build out a scouting department to figure out who I can bring in and not. And all this sort of stuff. He's like, you know, forget that. Let me go be a coordinator in the pros. I don't have to deal with
right.
that stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the college game at the moment doesn't look attractive in many aspects. I mean, Nick Saban leaving, you know, he got fired.
I'm sure this is part of it, right? I mean, he said he left because he was tired and exhausted, and I'm sure this contributes to it because it becomes a 365-day-a-year endeavor where you got to re-recruit your players, you got to vet the transfer portal, then you got the practices, and then you have the high school recruiting and all this sort of stuff. It is just a different game. It's a young person's game. And it's one of those things where, man, if you can go to the pros where you don't have to worry about any of that stuff, people are like, oh yeah, give me that. I get it. And that's another reason why I think we need the express train to paying the players and collectively bargaining this whole thing and not the local train. Because the faster we get there, the more we get a stable college football setup. I don't think instability does college football any good. I think there needs to be some form of stability for the fans and in the institutions and the students and all of that stuff to really maximize what's going on. And I'm all for the player movement, by the way. I love the transfer portal. So this isn't a slam on the transfer portal. It's just, I like it. But on the other hand, I mean, if you're going to succeed as a program now, as a big-time college basketball program or as a big-time college football program, the fact of the matter is you've got to build a professional-like scouting department, right, where you're not just scouting for recruits to bring in. You're scouting every team in the country. So you can figure out who you want to bring in by the transfer portal, who you want to recruit, what your roster construction is going to be, and then how does that impact the players you have on your team right now? Who do you stay loyal to, not loyal to? All of these sorts of things, and it just becomes a much bigger endeavor than ever, and that requires more resources, and that requires more money, and that requires more sophistication, and it's a changing.
Yeah, the old guard of coaches, you know, I understand, hey, look, you know, there was loyalty back in the day, but, you know, a lot has been taken from these players, and, you know, they should have a voice too. And honestly, I mean, you know, Michigan State has benefited from the transfer portal in the various sports as well. So we can't complain too much about it.
No, I don't. I actually think all of this is very interesting. I wonder if look, players should be allowed to go. Look, if coaches can go wherever they want, why shouldn't players?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So I think it's good. And I think that, look, players are making business decisions. And that's okay. They want to become pros. And so, you know, moving to the best place where they have the best opportunity is good for them. They should move to the place where they have the best opportunity. It's what other students would do if they had a chance to move to university. Give them better opportunity to become well compensated at whatever that they do. They would take advantage of it.
It's funny to me because in our lifetime, you know, like when we were at MSU, it was thought, not just at Michigan State, but, you know, all over college sports, in various sports, that a kid wouldn't want to go too far away from home to play. You know, to get a kid from another state was hard to do, like a player from the South to come up to the Midwest or vice versa. You know, now it just happens. It doesn't even matter, you know.
It's about playing time.
Yeah, truly. Yep.
That's what it boils down to. If they believe, well, it's about two things. It is about playing time and it's about development. If they believe the following, that A, they'll get playing time, and B, that your program will develop them into a professional, they will come.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep.
Those are the only two things that matter.
As well as,
and they're right.
And we've talked about this. Oh, they're absolutely right, yeah. And the other thing we talked about, too, is just based on the resources you have in a particular area, as we mentioned a lot in the state of Michigan, you know, the population has declined and the number of athletes that you can get there for the various sports is very limited now.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. You can't build the program, basketball or football, on the backs of in-state talent. Just can't do it anymore.
Nope. And really that goes for a lot of, yeah, that goes for a lot of places. I mean, it's not just, you know, sure, the SEC still has that advantage when it comes to football, but now everybody's shopping in those places too. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. That was a good tangent. Let's transition back to basketball for a second. And then we'll close up the men's basketball talk and move on to women's hoops. Upcoming schedule for Michigan State at Minnesota.
Yep.
I would say it's a win, but on the other hand, Satchmo has a history with Minnesota, and that history is bad.
Well, not to mention, Williams Arena still has that horrible floor that Judd used to hate. They've never changed
yes.
that thing, you know, where the benches are way below the, I mean, look, it's it should be more of a home court advantage for Minnesota than it is. I don't really understand, but at the same time, it's a hard place to play. And yeah, on paper, it looks like Michigan State is the better team, but I can't necessarily, I wouldn't guarantee anything that they're going to win that game.
Agreed. And I can't watch it anyway, so you'll have to text me.
I'll be peacocking it.
Yeah, yes, you will. All right. Illinois, this to me looks like the obvious loss on the upcoming schedule. 10th-ranked Illinois coming into the Breslin Center. I think Michigan State can be competitive in this game, but I'm not sure they can win it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know, you know, it just, I don't think Michigan State matches up very well with Illinois. It's sort of like Wisconsin and Purdue. But at the same time, it is in the Breslin Center, and if the crowd can get going and just take Illinois off their game a little bit and Michigan State comes up with some, you know, big defensive stops, it would be a huge signature win, much like the Baylor win from earlier in the year.
I agree. Look, if they win this, this does a lot for Michigan State.
Oh, yeah.
At Penn State on Valentine's Day, maybe we could get Bill Raftery with a little kiss to call the game. a little kiss.
Again, that should be a win, but, you know, sometimes we've had good Spartan teams go to state college hoops and just sort of wilt on the floor.
I mean, between the road games at Minnesota, Penn State, at Michigan, and at Indiana, and at Purdue, of course, the only one I'm comfortable saying I think Michigan State should win is Penn State. I mean,
I'll buy that.
I mean, yeah, I mean, at Minnesota, at Penn State, at Michigan, at Purdue, at Indiana. Those are the remaining road games.
Yeah.
Of that stretch, Penn State is the only one I feel comfortable saying, yeah, Michigan State should win that game.
Right. Right. Even with
Minnesota's not a great effort. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, to me, Minnesota's a toss-up. Michigan's a toss-up. Purdue's a loss. Indiana's a toss-up.
Indiana's just so hard to play there. I mean, and they're fighting for a tournament spot, too. I mean, it's not like we're not looking at, like, Indiana was pretty good last year. They're not really as good this year. They're about even with MSU. That game is in Breslin. I'm favoring MSU. But that Assembly Hall is just nuts. And it's their senior day. I don't know. That's going to be a hard game to win.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
And then the home games, we already mentioned Illinois. Iowa mm-hmm. at home, I like Michigan State there. Of course, it's another yep. game I can't watch because it's on Peacock. Ohio State at home, I like Michigan State there.
Yep.
And Northwestern at home, I like Michigan State in what bookies would call a revenge game.
Yeah. Yes. Now Northwestern is a giant slayer. You
yes.
know, they've beaten some. You get Northwestern in their backyard, just like Nebraska, and something happens. I don't know what it is, but I think Northwestern's taken down Purdue this year and almost did it again on the road. Nebraska has knocked out Wisconsin and Purdue on their home floor. Thank goodness I don't think we played. Oh, no, we already played in Nebraska and lost this year, too. So,
yeah, we are, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we already did that.
We already did our part to build up Nebraska's home record.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, no, I agree. I think Michigan State, and that's senior night for MSU. So there's going to be a buzz in the arena, and I like MSU's chances there.
I like MSU's chances, too. MSU generally turns up well on senior night.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the Spartans sit at 14 wins. And so by your math there, that gets us to around, even with just the wins you mentioned, what, 15, 16, 17, 18, about 18 wins?
Yeah, they're sitting at, what, 14 now?
Mm-hmm.
So let's pencil in Penn State is a win, 15, Iowa is mm-hmm. a win, 16, Ohio State 17, Northwestern 18, yeah, 18 wins.
Mm-hmm.
18 wins and maybe a win in the Big Ten tournament, and I think that should do it.
Yep, and then or 19 if you've beaten Illinois and you get all those other ones.
Yeah.
Which is a tall order. I wouldn't expect to win over Illinois, but it sure would be a good one.
Yes, it would.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The other interesting thing, at least to me, is Trey Holloman is evolving into a tremendous basketball player for Michigan State.
Yes.
Yep. Knocking out open threes, rarely turning the ball over except when he plays Maryland. And rarely turning the ball over. Good passing, runs the offense well, understands his role, really good minutes from him. I mean, Trey Holloman is one of the reasons Michigan State is, in the position it's in right now. He's contributed a lot towards their success. But I'm curious over the course of the next month to see how Kohler and Carr and Booker, those guys, and Cooper, see how those guys continue to develop, because if their game continues to grow and you're starting to get more and more sizable contributions from those players, the floor and the ceiling for Michigan State both rise. It really changes. And they're all young players, so there's actually room for growth and improvement within the season. And so to me, that's going to be the interesting thing for me to see is how these young players grow over the course of the next month and a half.
That's right, yeah. And, even when they play Purdue on the road, it's going to be daunting, but they can play a solid game against Purdue and keep it somewhat close or within 10 points. That's something they could hang their hat on.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's wrap up the men's basketball talk there. Let's talk a little women's basketball.
Yes.
Indeed. the women are in contention for an NCAA tournament bid in Coach Froelich's first season here. They're 7-4 in conference, 17-5 overall. They're on a four-game win streak. They're 11-1 at home, 3-1 on neutral courts.
One tonight again, by the way,
for a debut
over Minnesota.
Yeah, and they beat
Robin
Minnesota.
Robin Froelich's come in with much like what you have seen with Adam Nightingale with hockey, just this fresh start. Took over pretty much the same roster. I don't think MSU tapped the transfer portal very much with this roster, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they didn't.
No.
And they've had a lot of injuries this year, too.
Yeah, it's a thin roster. And she's doing a tremendous job. I mean, this team looks completely different than last year. They were hesitant last year. They were just not playing up to what they could. We didn't know what they had at times last year. And all of a sudden, you just see it's just a complete difference. It's the mentality of the team. They're
playing free and loose.
Yes. Yes.
And you and I went to watch them last year when they lost to Maryland in college.
Yeah.
And they were in that game throughout, but they just looked tight in big moments.
Yeah.
And this year, they don't look tight in big moments. They look joyful and happy, and it's such a difference.
Yes. Yeah. Last year, it seemed like there was almost a struggle within themselves to play better or play well. And it was there. It didn't come out. And somehow, new coach, fresh ideas, push some buttons. And what do you know? I didn't even realize that they're in contention for a tournament bid, but I had a suspicion, you know, minus Iowa, that they're doing all right. I mean, it's definitely much better than last year. I knew that much.
Yeah, much better than last year. You can see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you wondering, the next two games at Indiana and home against Ohio State, both on Peacock, Satchmo will not be watching.
Satchmo will not be watching.
will not be watching. But the February 18th game at Ann Arbor, and Michigan State beat Michigan at the Breslin Center. 82-61, big win. This game's on the Big Ten Network.
Yeah,
this just annoys me, right? Michigan comes to East Lansing. It's on Big Ten Plus, so you can only get it streaming. And then the game's in Ann Arbor, and they put it on BTN. I mean, what's up with that?
Yeah, all I can say is I think you said this last podcast, Etchmo. It's time for BTN to just get into different divisions of sports. The Big Ten football, Big Ten basketball channel, Big Ten women's basketball channel, you know, hockey. It's enough with the plus and the whatever and the, you know, you can raise the price a little bit for people that want them. But just, yeah, it's time. Or give people a menu on the, you know, if you've got it on YouTube, what do you want to watch? You know, you want to watch wrestling? You want to watch hockey? You want to?
Yep.
Give me a choice.
100%
it's so
with you.
Yep. No, it's so stupid. Really.
100%. Look, Big Ten is filled with sports fans from every school, every state. There is an appetite for every sport.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's time to give the people what they want. At Purdue and home against Rutgers, both on Big Ten Plus, BTN Plus.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous, especially the Rutgers game. Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
February 29th, 29 days in February. We're in a leap year. That game at the Breslin Center is on the Big Ten Network.
Yep, against Illinois. Yep.
Against Illinois, and then close the season at Wisconsin.
Yeah, so there's a possibility.
Make some noise.
I think so. I mean, I think out of those games, sure, Indiana is going to be tough. Ohio State's going to be very difficult. But you go beyond that, and there's a chance, even the Michigan game, there's a chance for MSU to do some work. Michigan, you know, it is in their building. I suspect a lot of Michigan State fans will be there, and I think Michigan State has a better team this year than Michigan, women's basketball-wise, and I don't see why MSU couldn't go in there and win that game.
Well, for many years in the men's basketball side of things, Chrysler Arena was just a second home for Michigan State. It was Breslin East, right? And so I think over the course of the next few years, I think it is our job to make Chrysler Arena a second home for the Michigan State women and turn it into Breslin East again.
Yep. Well, MSU's women dominated that rivalry. That was one thing Susie Merchant did do for a while. They dominated that rivalry for a good stretch. I think it was like 12 or 14. It was a lot. It was a lot of wins.
It was a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So. All right. I think that's a good spot to wrap up the women's hoops talk on. Great job. Just great job. Hockey.
Yes.
The good news is they're above 500 in the new year. This has been a problem. Better news is they won a game in the new year.
They've won a few. Yeah.
The bad news, and look, this is a hockey team that's in good shape, right? They're 12-4-2 in conference. 10-2 mm-hmm. and 1 at home, 7-5-1 on the road, and, 1-0-1 neutral site, 18-7-3 overall. Very good showing. This is the best showing we've seen out of Michigan State hockey in years.
Yes.
Very excited about that. But if you take a look, DB, after the Penn State sweep to start the year, it's been a split against Michigan, a split against Minnesota, a split against Indiana.
Yep.
And now we've got this weekend at Michigan, at Yost, and then the duel in the D. That's the game at Little Caesars Arena.
Yes, which is on the Big Ten Network.
Finally, the Big Ten Network does something right.
I know, yes. It's amazing. I never thought I'd see the day.
Just shocking. Yeah. The Friday games on Big Plus, Big Ten Network Plus, which, once again, stupid. Look, Michigan seems to have the better team. Am I wrong?
That's a really good question. It's an interesting point you make because, I mean, if you just looked at it on paper and the production they get from, like, their top line, you could say so. But then ranking-wise, conference standing-wise, overall record, MSU's slightly better. In that regard,
I don't know. I agree with that, but I just watching them head to head, it just looks like Michigan's got more jump, more speed, more skill.
Yes, head to head. Yes, in the two games that they played in East Lansing, where they got walloped, and then they came, and then they had that awesome second half of the game in Ann Arbor, and they won. By the way, I just want to give a lot of shout out to the number of MSU fans that were in Yost for that game made a lot of noise, and that was great to see. So it's a matchup thing. It's a little bit like that with Minnesota. MSU's got to kick that into a third or fourth gear when they play those teams, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, they might not be as fast, But they were able to knock Minnesota out in Munn in that first game with an awesome 4 seconds remaining win, which was incredible. But then the next night, Minnesota walloped them. So, you know, they're not going to be able to win every night against those teams. But, you know, these are good tests, I guess, for this team. Let's see if they can do one of these, you know, splits again this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I'd love to see them string together two in a row. That would be good.
Mm-hmm.
The Michigan game is the last chance to see him on the Big Ten Network TV.
I know.
Ohio State both on Big Ten Plus. Wisconsin after that, both on Big Ten Plus.
Yeah, and again, they shouldn't make the schedule totally in advance at the conference because, I mean, I understand that they put Michigan and Minnesota on the same weekend because traditionally the last several years that's been the best matchup in the conference. But Michigan State and Wisconsin could end up, oddly, being for the conference title that weekend in Madison.
Mm-hmm. Really? You want to have some flexibility in scheduling because that's the one that counts.
Yeah, or at least do a doubleheader. I don't understand.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Yeah, the Big Ten Network needs to take a fire hose to some of their ideas there with what they're doing.
Yeah. I really wished. The Big Ten just needs to hire us, BB.
Yeah. Let's take it over.
Part-time consultant.
First,
we'll just fix everything for
them. Yep. The first thing we're going to do, the logo is going to be green.
Oh, yeah. None of the
yeah.
blue stuff
they
on
won't.
The logo. Are you kidding me?
We're not going to hold back on who we root for.
Yeah, absolutely. Green and white. Away.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then we'll figure out the rest.
Yeah. There is one color blue, DB. That you and I like and have been cheering for recently, that will be the Honolulu Blue.
The Honolulu Blue, yes.
The Honolulu Blue and Silver, the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
It's been quite a ride the last few years, and a very enjoyable ride at that. Dan
mm-hmm.
Campbell getting hired as the coach, Holmes as the general manager. The two completely changing over the roster, the culture, the expectations, and the team that they've built as a result, strong on the offensive line, strong on the defensive line, which is, by the way, how you build good football teams. You don't build them by drafting wide receivers in the first round.
Thank you, Lions history lesson.
Well, it's just pointing it out, right?
Just took the Lions a long time to grasp that concept, I think.
Yeah, I feel like the Lions have always gone star hunting in drafts rather than building strong teams from the ground up.
Right. Exactly.
It's in a way, it's kind of understandable when you think about, you know, like local TVs, games that selling out and therefore
right.
fans not seeing them. And, you get a star in and then you lift the blackout and all that sort of good stuff. I mean, I kind of see it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the bottom line is you don't build good football teams by star hunting. You build it in the trenches.
Right. Right.
And so they've done it the right way here. They built it
mm-hmm.
in the trenches, and then you build down the middle of the field. You add in
yep.
the safeties and the linebackers and the quarterback and the running backs and that sort of stuff. And they've done a really good job building this team.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time the team was this good, made it to the conference final, was in 1991. And
mm-hmm.
I think we all believed back in 1991 that the Lions would be back in the conference finals, and they never did. It took them 33 years to get back.
Yes.
But I think there's a valid argument to be made that this team, thanks to quality, having a quality general manager and coach, is actually much better equipped to return to the playoffs year after year after year than that previous team, simply because the depth, the strength on both sides of the line, and the way this team seems to be built to last, it just feels a little different.
Yes, absolutely. As very Lions-esque as that playoff loss was to San Francisco, and I say Lions-esque because there's not a lot of teams that would have the ball bounce off of the defender into the open arms of the wide receiver to walk right into the end zone and shift the momentum of the entire game in one play. But that happens to the Lions.
Didn't it feel like we're sitting there watching that play, and it just felt like all of the Lions' good juju just disappeared in that one play.
Yes, it did. Yes. I became very nervous and sweaty in that moment.
And you're right. It did feel like very Lions-esque, just very there's the big mistake we were waiting for sort of thing. And then you got the fumble after that, and then you had the drop of a fourth down catch that should have been made. And it just looked like the Lions couldn't get out of their own way after that.
Yes. It was... But to your point, there was something about the end of it. Even though they lost, and it was incredibly disappointing, it didn't feel like last Lions playoff losses, where the previous losses the Lions had in playoffs, even when Matt Stafford was there, sometimes they felt sort of like endings or, nah, this team just doesn't have it or it's going to take a lot more. It doesn't feel that way this time. It feels like this team can truly be back in 2024.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, what the last time when the Lions lost in the playoffs in 91, it was like they were clearly not the better team on the field.
No.
They got blown out.
No, they – yes, yeah.
In this game, it felt like the Lions were going toe-to-toe with – what everyone would thought was clearly the best team in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was interesting. The other thing that I thought was interesting is that I just wanted to keep going back to this 1991 comparison for a little bit, is that that team was built around like supremely gifted skill players and an average to slightly below average offensive line. Lomas Brown was great, but you know, outside of that, it just wasn't very good. And the defensive line had its moments, but it wasn't great either. This is built around stuff that travels and lasts: a great offensive line and a defensive line that is growing into a pretty good one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That elimination of Green Bay and the career of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay last year was not a fluke.
No, not a fluke at all. And look, as good as Amon-Ra St. Brown is, and he is very good, he's not as good as Herman Moore or Johnny Morton.
Nope, or even Calvin Johnson for that matter.
Yet the Lions can win with him because they've got a great offensive line and a good running game and all the elements that go with it. He can be a great receiver in the NFL because he's part of a system that works for him. And so, to me, this is the difference.
Yes.
I'm excited about the Lions' future. They're going to be fun to watch again next year. And if they can get some more help on the defensive line and get some more help in the secondary and raise that raise the floor of that unit up a little more. You get a healthy Jameson Williams the entire year. You get Amon-Ra St. Brown back. You get LaPorta. You've got a great offensive line. Jahmyr Gibbs in his second season. DB, this team's got – I mean, don't get me wrong. They need to add players and add pieces. They've got a realistic shot of going places again next year.
Yeah, and not to mention both of their coordinators who were highly thought of for – other head coaching jobs came back.
By the way, all the sour grapes coming out of Washington over the Johnson turning down the job.
I mean, what do you want? I mean, first of all, I don't know. Did they lowball Johnson?
Well, look, you and I have no idea what happened. Nobody knows what happened except for Johnson and the Commanders. But the sour grapes coming out are immediately. Like, after he turned the job down, the Commander's like, well, we didn't want him anyway. He didn't really interview well in the first round.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, his salary demands were too high. Come on.
Excuses.
And then you get the leak of Johnson just thought they were basketball people, but they weren't serious. Come on, people. What are we doing here?
Well, I mean, it is the 76ers ownership operation taking over the Commanders. I mean, the Washington Commanders is a huge lift. I mean, like, you know, you're going from the Lions, who have a team that could do things and go all the way, and the Commanders are not even close to that. They're in the distant future, far future right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is remarkable. And what it goes down to, and look, I'm sure there was a story that came out that said Johnson's like, yeah, I just want to win a Super Bowl in Detroit. Like, two can play at the media game, but Washington, what are you doing? You don't trash the finalist that didn't take the job, because the next time you wanted to get hired, you want to know what top candidates aren't going to want to interview with you.
Exactly. Right. I mean, you think that the owners – they have new owners, and they pull one right out of the whole Dan Snyder playbook. Well, let's just trash them.
Good grief. I mean, Washington football team ownership management, put your big boy pants on.
Yeah. My goodness gracious.
Yeah.
But you know what? You're a Giants fan. I'm a Lions fan. We root for those teams. Washington, blah.
There are more leaks in the Washington organization than there are in most White Houses. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And more leaks in the stadium. Though the poopy water that comes down on the suite holders.
Oh, my goodness.
Or last year, we had Jalen Hurts from the Eagles having to rescue fans from a faulty rail where people were about to fall down and hit their heads celebrating an Eagles victory. Good grief.
It's remarkable. The Washington football team is pretty much the only football team in the NFL where if you gave someone tickets for free, they would say no thank you.
I actually have been offered tickets and said no thank you.
Same here.
Yeah. I don't want to go watch that.
No.
No. Mm-mm.
You don't want to watch that in that place.
Right.
Spend a full day to get there just to be swimming in sewage? I mean, come on now, people. What are we doing here?
Oh, those Washington sports franchises.
So, Look, congratulations to the Lions for a heck of a season. Congratulations to Lions fans who traveled and showed up everywhere.
Yes. I've never seen anything like that.
Never seen. I hope it keeps happening.
Yep.
The idea of Lions fans just showing up en masse to every stadium in the country is just so awesome.
Yes.
I love it.
Yep. I think the Lions started to become like everybody's favorite because they're that Charlie Brown team that always, you know, misses the football. And, you know, people were texting me that knowing that I'm such a big Lions fan, hey, they're doing pretty well against San Francisco. Of course, I was like, all right, you know, tone it down a little bit. You know, tone it down. It's halftime. You know, 24-7, tone it down. But still, the enthusiasm was tremendous.
It was. And if the Lions had won, DB, they would have earned the right to see Taylor Swift in person.
I was about to – that's a professional segue. I was about to do a Taylor Swift reference myself. I was going to say, well, the Lions don't need Taylor Swift in their suite.
Oh. So let's talk about – and we're not going to talk about the game because the game is going to be a good game. Because San Francisco City is going to be a good game. It's going to be an entertaining game. Everyone should watch and enjoy it. And watch and enjoy it with no regrets, because you want to know what, the Lions had a great season. They fell short. It's okay. It's a really good team. Just watch and enjoy the game.
Exactly.
Well, one regret. The Super Bowl's in Vegas. And how fun would that have been? But besides that regret, the more interesting storyline to me is Taylor Swift. And it's interesting on two fronts. First of all, what is all of this Taylor Swift backlash about?
Yeah.
I mean, honest to goodness, I mean, Tom Brady, when he was married to Gisele Bündchen, we got all the crowd shots. No one complained. And they might have said, oh, it's a little too much. But no one got mad and upset about it. Jerry Jones, a picture of the box of him in every Cowboys game dozens of times. Right. No one gets mad and upset about that. I mean, this is the way sports coverage works. Yet we're mad about Taylor Swift.
Right. Taylor Swift is, for some reason, and it would probably take 20 podcasts for us to figure it out, a very divisive person in this country for some reason.
Oh, I know the reason. It's because a certain segment of society has made her a divisive figure. Right?
Yes.
They're mad that she's a feminist. They're mad that she believes in empowering women. They're mad that, you know, she'll endorse politicians that they don't like. And never mind the fact that I'm sure Jerry Jones, people know his political views. I'm sure, you know, never mind the fact that, you know, a lot of these celebrities are well known. But they're mad about it. And they're like, go get her off my TV screen. But the funny thing is, if they put up a musician whose views they agreed with, they'd be like, yeah, it's fine. Show them as much as they want.
Yeah.
But they really don't show her on TV all that often. Look, Colin Cowherd, and this might be the only time I've ever said this my entire life, Colin Cowherd went on like a 2.5-3 minute rant about this, and he was brilliant. And he was 100% right. It's like, she gets, what, 26 seconds of airtime in an entire game, and this is what you're mad about? This is what you want to fight about?
Yeah, the crowd shots at the NFL game don't bother me. you know, it's a whole thing, right? I mean, she's dating the star tight end of the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, that doesn't affect the game. It's just, but football especially lends itself to celebrity, as does the NBA. You know, when you see the celebrities in the crowd, you know, those two sports generate a lot of celebrity culture around them.
Yeah, there's a lot of celebrity culture. People don't get mad when Jack Nicholson, you'd see photos of Jack, I mean, shots of Jack Nicholson.
No
one gets mad when you see shots of Spike Lee.
No.
Right?
Right.
But you're going to get mad at a shot of Taylor Swift? What's the difference? Jack Nicholson, Spike Lee, Taylor Swift. One's a woman.
Yeah.
The other aren't. That's it.
I think my thing with Taylor Swift is less really about her being at the games. I'm just kind of tired of hearing about her. And there's not really, you know, in self-examination, I don't hate Taylor Swift. I don't use Taylor Swift as some sort of political item or anything like that. I'm just, we hear so much about her that I just feel the need to sort of tune her out or to turn away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you're saying you're just tired of hearing about her, and I kind of get it.
Yes. Yeah, I was disappointed. Did you watch the Grammy Awards?
I did not watch the Grammy Awards.
Okay. Did you watch any highlights or read anything after?
Yeah, Taylor Swift won, which to me isn't a major surprise. She released an album sold a gazillion times, and she's on the biggest global tour music scene in a long time.
It
made perfect sense to me.
Right. And everybody loves her, and the Fortune 500 companies want her. The movie business worships her because it got, you know, a new way for people to come back into the movie theaters and watch. You know, all brilliant, all great. No problem with that. I was slightly disappointed with her acceptance speeches. She got up there and just promoted a new album. I don't know. I'm just like, is that it? Like, you know.
I get what you're saying. That really doesn't bother me because selling music is so hard these days that being a professional musician means you'll always be closing.
Yeah. I guess the moment to me called for something even more, you know.
Yeah.
You talked about feminism. You talked about women. You talked about, you know, there's so many other things. And then she won again, and I don't know what the second thing was. I don't know the awards. Do you recall what the – I know the one was best album, maybe pop album or something. I don't know what the second one was. Song of the Year? I don't know.
Yeah, I can see being disappointed in that.
She was roundly dissed the second time. She wasn't really dissed about the album promotion. I think a lot of people said what you said. But the second time, Celine Dion was up there. And, of course, generations of people know her songs one way or another. You know, they're on the radio. They're played at weddings a lot. You know, I mean, a lot of people from a lot of generations know her. She's, I guess, unbeknownst to me until last night, had some health problems. And she got up there to announce the awardee for that. It was like the last one of the night. And, you know, so the thought was at that point, you know, if you're betting on that, it's probably going to be Taylor Swift now at this point. And it was. And the Twitter sphere, or whatever you want to call it now, the exosphere, just sort of like blew up because she didn't really, in the moment, acknowledge Celine Dion. And I wasn't really that upset about that, but I was sort of like curious. I think what goes on with her, and this is just my whole theory, she just doesn't really, she lives so much in the moment. I don't think she really thinks about stuff until, I think she had to be told by her publicist, now you need to post with Celine after the fact for Instagram.
Yeah.
Does it make sense what I'm saying?
It could be, but on the other hand, I think this is the same Taylor Swift that when she won one time, she got mad that she won because she thought Beyonce deserved it.
Yeah, that was during the whole Kanye rant.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I feel like, I almost feel like we're judging Taylor Swift on a different scale.
True.
But I mean, I agree. I mean, I agree. It would have been nice of her to acknowledge, acknowledge Celine Dion in the moment, and that would have been the right thing to do. And she probably flubbed that up. And if you asked her, she probably would have been like, "Yeah, I should have done that."
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, she also had a few drinks. I mean, you know, you get a few drinks flowing in you. She's not shy about that. And you know, the cool thing about her is, as opposed to some artists who are a little stuffy. And, you know, with the competition, she was standing up singing all the other people's songs, which I thought was great. You know, like, you know, she is not arrogant in that way that maybe some people would never do that. You know, and you could, the list is long, you know. Right, exactly. She listens to those songs, you know.
Which is very cool.
It is very cool. Yep.
And it is also an ultimate sign of respect.
Yes.
That she knows these songs, she sings along with them, and she likes them. I think it's very cool. That's one of the things I've always liked about Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Speaking of Kanye, we didn't have Kanye, or Ye, as he is now known, but we did have sort of a similar kind of Kanye moment near the end with Jay-Z. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, so Jay-Z was awarded a Dr. Dre sort of like honor, not for anything new that he was doing, but an honor for rap artists, historical. And he used his platform to sort of bash the Grammy Academy or whatever it is that nominates.
Oh yeah.
Artists.
No, good for him.
Yeah. Yep. And
the Grammys deserve
I didn't
that.
Even, I forgot. I mean, Beyonce did have new music this year and it was good, but she wasn't even nominated at all, which surprised me. I guess I'd forgotten. It was well earlier in the year of 2023 that I heard her stuff. But then I was like, oh wow. Like she didn't make it into the nomination.
Yeah, but even at the height of her powers, Beyonce struggled to win awards.
That's right.
And this is the problem with the Grammys, right? Which is,
yeah,
if you can't recognize Beyonce at the height of her powers, what good are you?
Well, and not unlike the Oscars, you got a lot of white people, you know, who are naming who wins those awards.
Yeah.
And it's not fair. I mean, you know, just like it wasn't fair that women hadn't been winning all this time, and it wasn't fair that women weren't getting nominated into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and that black people weren't getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And you know, so yeah, Jay-Z spoke out. It wasn't in the same sort of weird way that, you know, Kanye interrupted the speech or whatever, and, you know, Beyonce was appalled. And it wasn't anything like that. But, you know, I mean, he spoke up and spoke out, and, you know, good for him. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, if Beyonce was my wife, I'd get up there, too, and probably do a rant, you know? I mean.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good for Jay-Z.
Yeah. But I will say that the in memoriam thing, usually, which is very tempered, and they just show shots of the huge, large number of people that passed away last year in the music industry and film and TV. Like I was blown away by the number of people, but especially in music. And the way they did it was they had three pretty popular artists. Stevie Wonder, huge artist, tribute to Tony Bennett, do one of his songs.
Oh,
Annie
wow.
Lennox did Nothing Compares to You, written by Prince with Wendy and Lisa backing her up. and salute to Sinead O'Connor. And then you had John Batiste, amazingly, do a gospel number, and then Ain't No Sunshine by Bill Withers, even though Bill Withers, I don't think he passed away last year, but his tribute was to the black godfather of music, whose name I forgot, who helped put Bill Withers and so many other artists on the map, and I'm doing a disservice by not remembering this gentleman's name right now, but that was amazing. Like, that part of the show was, even though it was, you know, about all these people that passed away, you know, was so moving and amazing. I mean, John Batiste even yelled, "This is a celebration of life."
Yeah, well, first of all, Bill Withers died in 2020.
Okay.
Bill Withers, genius.
Amazing. Yeah.
I don't think people understand how good Bill Withers is or was.
Right.
I mean, this man is was a musical tour de force.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, here are just some of his hits: "Ain't No Sunshine," "Grandma's Hand," "Use Me," "Lean On Me," "Lovely Day," and "Just the Two of Us."
Oh yeah,
that's just a few of the hits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most artists are lucky to get one song that big. So good there, John Batiste. Do people know how good this man is?
He's incredible.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
What wasn't John Batiste the leader of one of the late night show bands for a while, maybe for Colbert?
Yeah, I believe he still is, right?
I know he was for a while. I think he left.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. But you're correct. He had been associated with Colbert, yeah.
Yeah. You talk about musical genius. John Batiste.
Oh.
Just...
Yeah, he's tremendous. Yeah.
Just fabulous.
Yeah.
And just so underappreciated, or just doesn't get enough credit, or I don't know what it is, but when you hear people talk about great musicians, John Batiste should be at the top of the list, yet nope. People don't talk about him like that reverentially, or just don't talk about him among the greats the way he should be.
Yeah. The other cool moment in the show for me, and it's worth going back to watch, is Luke Combs, the country singer, did his own sort of twangy take on "Fast Car" by Tracy Chapman from the late 80s. And Tracy Chapman joined him on stage for a duet early in the show. And it was fantastic, and it sounded so good. But my favorite part was watching Luke Combs almost admiring and just in awe that he was up on the stage with Tracy Chapman doing the song.
Yeah, so I did see that.
Yes.
It is one of the things that broke through on social media, and everyone just loved it, was amazed by it. What a cool moment that was.
Yes, it was. Yes. People in the audience were standing up, singing and dancing to that. I mean, it was great. I've never seen anything like that at one of those award shows. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yes. Yeah. The performances were great. SZA was fantastic. I can't complain about it. I mean, the Grammys do a great job of tightening things up. They release a bunch of the awards ahead of time, and they're like, "We're only going to show you the big ones." That's it. And so, yeah, I think that's the way it should be. Other award shows take note of that.
It's interesting that the Grammys treat their award show like a TV show. And not an award show. And the Emmys and Oscars treat their night like an award show and not a TV show.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
As a result, the Grammys is more entertaining to watch, but you walk away having no idea who won what or why.
Yes.
And the Emmys and the Oscars are boring, but you know who won what.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, the Grammys also have a million categories now, but that's okay. You know, everybody gets an award somewhere, but the best part was Trevor Noah. He had so many good jokes. I don't think the audience got half of them, at least the ones that were in the crypto.com arena. I think they didn't get it because of all the shuffling around of the live show, but I was rolling on my couch. I mean, the line he did about, you know, welcome back to the place where none of these people are on Epstein's list. And I was just like, oh my God.
That's funny. Well, let's face it. Trevor Noah is one funny dude.
Yes.
And Trevor Noah was the smartest person in the arena.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Hands down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, any comedian doing an award show just needs to study Trevor Noah.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I would love to see Trevor Noah do stand up.
Oh yeah, that would be fantastic.
That would be 100%
worth it. Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel does a great job with the Oscars, and I think he's back there again this year, but hands down, Trevor Noah. And I'm going to just jump out of the Grammys for a moment. I know we're going to wrap up soon, but I also read recently, and you may have learned, Jon Stewart is returning once a week through the calendar year for the elections on The Daily Show.
Oh, so it's just once a week. I saw he was returning, and I thought he was returning on a daily basis, but it's just once a week.
Monday nights.
What? He's too old to do a full week? What's going on?
I don't know. I'm getting the sense maybe he doesn't want that whole, you know, maybe he's going to have to be talked into it. He's still an executive producer of the show, but they still have not. To show you how good Trevor Noah was, they have not been able to find someone to sit in the chair. You can't replace him. You cannot replace him or Jon Stewart, but Jon Stewart had to actually come back one day a week because I guess they're going to keep doing these revolving hosts because they still can't find anyone to occupy that chair on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, is they can't find someone to occupy the chair. I think the other part of it is it's an election year, and Jon Stewart just wants to come back.
And we need him because we missed him in the last two, because he retired from that in 2015.
Yes.
And yeah.
For all of you hoping this is going to lead in a surge of young people voting, stop it.
It won't. No.
It won't.
But it will be funny.
It will be funny.
Yes.
And in the end, that's the only thing that counts.
That's right.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to end that show.
I think so, too.
All right. You know, because we are allowed to play music, we'll have music play us out. But thanks for listening, everyone. We will be back, you know, sometime soon to talk more Michigan State sports, more music, more Detroit Lions. We don't talk the Tigers because it's just too depressing. But
or the Pistons.
Or the Pistons, yeah. We might throw in a little Red Wings talk next time, though.
Yeah,
on that note, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.